Welcome to Business Watch, and we're talking about infrastructure today. And speaking to two CEOs recently at their results announcements, Dominique Sewela of Barloworld and Roland van Veenen of PPC, it's clear that our grand infrastructure plans are still stuck in first gear. And predictably, President Cyril Ramaphosa's economic recovery and reconstruction plan placed a grand 1 trillion rand infrastructure program at the center, leveraging up to 660 billion rands of crowded in private sector capital, or so it's hoped at least. But plans are wearing thin, and I think only execution matters at this late stage to pull South Africa back from the brink of economic disaster. Now, we recently saw the launch of the Asset Owners Forum South Africa, which seemed to pass without much fanfare in the broader mainstream media. Well, to find out what this means and whether this will actually get our stalled infrastructure program out of first gear, it's a great pleasure to welcome now Ndaba Zinhle Mkhize, who's Chief Investment Officer of the Eskom Pension and Provident Fund. He's also Chair of the Asset Owners Forum South Africa, and Emile de Toy, MD of Fundraising and Liability Management at Harith General Partners, one of the largest infrastructure GPs in the country. Emile, kick us off here. We've had a couple of infrastructure conferences, the 50 strategic SIPs announced, and yet all I can really see are a handful of projects, Bait Bridge upgrade, phase two of Lesotho Highlands being big ones. The thing is, nobody believes government anymore when it says it's going to spend on infrastructure to unlock growth. What's going on?
Thanks. Thanks, Michael. I would say that actually behind the scenes, there are probably more going on than the people would see in the headlines of the news. You must remember when government talks about infrastructure and delivery, it covers the broad spectrum of both public sector and private sector investments. So clearly, we look at infrastructure projects more from the private sector side, and we have seen some movement in terms of new projects and opportunities opening up. As a good example has been on the energy side, being able to deliver much more rapidly projects up to 100 megawatts because of the new regulations. But then I think on the public sector side also, whilst we're not directly involved in investing in those, I think you are seeing some movement. I've seen some recent press around the N2 expansion again. So I think on the road side, et cetera, there's probably a lot more happening than people are realizing. So it's not a ship that turns around quickly, unfortunately, and all the right sounds and noises are being made, and definitely seeing some progress, but yes, still a lot more to be done.
So Emile, clearly things are moving in the private sector. I think that has been one of the big wins of Operation Vulindlela in particular, is unblocking the bottlenecks around energy reform, and going from 1 megawatt to 50 megawatts now to 100 megawatts has certainly created a lot of momentum in the energy space. But perhaps we need to dial it back here. And Ndaba, when we talk about infrastructure, because there's private infrastructure, there's public infrastructure, I know the recent draft of Regulation 28, the second one, has now been published, and it's all about how we define infrastructure, because if pension funds are going to invest in it, we need to know what we're talking about and how we define and measure it. How do you define infrastructure from the pension fund's perspective?
Thank you, Michael. It's important to realize that the bigger real assets platform includes infrastructure and direct property. And infrastructure will have various segments. But basically, it's the physical assets that underpin any normally functioning economy. So that it would entail economic infrastructure, things like roads, transportation, energy, digital infrastructure, as well as some of the social infrastructure like education and healthcare, water, although increasingly water is needed in the industrial setting, and you won't be able to do much production if you don't have that water. So it's these assets that are tangible, that are part of any normally functioning economy that the country needs. And they tend to be long dated, or they tend to produce long dated cash flows, and are therefore suitable for matching the liabilities of a pension fund. And more importantly, when you invest in them, you tend to be able to put real money into the real economy. So not only get growth, but get job creating growth. And for our perspective, we want to ensure that we can have good returns, acceptable level of risk, and also dial up on the positive impact, whether it be job creation, be various other things, reducing unemployment that comes with investing in the various segments of infrastructure and the total real assets panoply.
As economists often love to refer to those multipliers, what are those economic multipliers that we get for every rand spent in infrastructure? But to come back to my opening point and question to Emil, I think there is a deep sense of skepticism, cynicism in the market that we're just not able to execute on the infrastructure front. And if you look at the numbers, fixed investment was below 20% of GDP in 2016. It obviously collapsed during the pandemic to 12.5% in 2020. And it's forecast to be only 12% this year. What do you see as the major bottlenecks and drivers behind this poor rate of fixed investment broadly in the South African economy? Ndaba?
I see the investments actually being something that would create a lot of impetus and growth in the economy. And in a way, we need to increase that gross capital formation as a percentage of GDP. If you think about countries like China, it's almost 30%. So if we're languishing at 10 and 12%, we're not doing ourselves any favors. And it becomes a self-fulfilling prophecy. The more we don't invest in our economy, the lower that growth is going to be. And international players are going to look at South Africa and say, well, it's only less than 1% of the world's economy, and even the growth is not good enough, so why should we be getting there? So this investment in infrastructure actually starts to lift that confidence, starts to lift that economic growth, which can then be a positive feedback as people see the numbers growing, economic activity growing, and therefore South Africa being a good country to invest in. I think we cannot wait until the winds of change are blowing nicely until all the indicators are looking up. This is one of those things where we need to be able to say it's a good asset class that can give us good returns, acceptable level of risk. Actually, some of the infrastructure debt has lower risk than some of the investment grade corporate bonds, and it can drive a growth. So when we make a concerted effort, just like we did with the World Cup, there's a reason why the infrastructure spend increased, because we had a deliverable to make. And I believe the best way to get ourselves out of this COVID-19 induced economic slump, and actually what we've been observing over the past 5 years of low growth, has to be ameliorated by our investments in infrastructure assets that make sense, that are bankable. So we believe that actually all of these negative numbers will start to look better as we invest in some much needed infrastructure and create our own future, as opposed to be living in some self-fulfilling prophecy.
And I think most people certainly would agree and understand that. And but the question is why we haven't been able to, recognizing the importance of gross fixed capital formation to the economy, looking at the NDP saying 30% is the target, why we haven't been able to lift it from the 10 to 12% range. Emil, if you look at some of the reasons behind why gross fixed capital formation, private fixed capital formation has been so low, what do you see as the key binding constraints up to this point that have prevented us from achieving a sustained period of 30% or thereabouts in fixed capital formation?
Thanks, Michael. I think the holy grail for us is to really start attracting international DFI, and getting inward investments. And unfortunately, on that front, I think we've shot ourselves in the foot a few times over the last year or so with the riots and the Eskom situation, et cetera. So typically, foreign investors have taken a bit of a wait-and-see approach. And I think that's where I agree with Ndaba. I think the multiplier effect is very clear. The benefits are very clear. And that's why I think something like the Asset Owners Forum is also very positive, because ultimately, as Ndaba says, we now have to look at the South African asset owners and investors and pension funds to kickstart that investment. So we need to be the first in to say, we're going to invest in our own infrastructure. As Ndaba says, the returns are there, the risks are manageable, and actually does deliver quite well. So we're going to have to start the vehicle moving and get those numbers up. And once that is evidenced over, out of your returns, you will start seeing multiplier effects in terms of also foreign investors coming in. And that's really what you need. As an economy the size of South Africa, we can invest in critical projects ourselves. But ultimately, when you really want to get into those value-adding infrastructure investments, a lot of those require foreign investments as well. And that's why people like ourselves, you know, are on a consistent basis trying to attract foreign capital into the country.
And we know the project risk lifecycle of real assets, and Ndaba, just to bring you in here, is obviously one that generally requires some government or DFI type first risk capital through the early phase of the project, because as you ramp up execution risk, delivery, construction, all of that is very high risk. And then once you built the asset, you see very consistent, stable returns in a secondaries market like the renewable space, for example. We see a lot of activity there at the moment. So within that context, tell me about what the Asset Owners Forum South Africa is all about and what you're hoping to achieve, to build on what Emil was saying there about kickstarting this investment program in South Africa.
Excellent, and actually I'm going to start a bit briefly into what Emil was also saying, that one of the reasons why we haven't seen a lot of investments is that the due diligence costs can actually be high just doing on one asset. So one asset owner, one pension fund can do it, but then they won't be able to do it at scale. Every time they do it, they need to pay a high legal cost, a high technical due diligence. Whereas if you come together, as the Asset Owners Forum wants to do, you'll then be able to split those costs amongst the participants, so that when you are investing, your unit costs are lower, and you're able to share that information, share that due diligence research. Secondly, is also be able to improve that knowledge or flatten that learning curve, so that both the trustees and some asset consultants can come up to speed and be able to recommend this asset class and invest in it with conviction. Also having an advocacy voice, so not only lowering the costs and ensuring that there's much knowledge and less information asymmetry. What I mean by that is that when an asset manager comes and sells you a project, they probably know more about that project than you do. So you want to have some peer-to-peer learning and be able to know that actually you as asset owners know a lot more about that asset class as well that is being presented to you. So, but it's important to ensure that we are having government coming in, especially for public sector focused projects that are bankable. So they're coming in. We sit in the infrastructure investment committee and can see all these projects that are coming through, be water, be energy, be it one stop border post, and all those type of projects that we can see they are being proposed for the infrastructure fund to invest in them. The infrastructure fund will then be looking to see commercial players like banks, like pension funds, to come in and co-invest. And our sweet spot is to invest when that construction risk has been removed. But the fact that they know we will invest if those projects make sense enables banks, enables DFIs, and all those first mover participants to know that they can invest, and right, knowing that commercial players will be able to have that that offtake. And I think an important point, sorry, Michael, to finish, is it's well and good to say we want international investors, but the international investors want local smart money to invest as a means of a due diligence, and is also as a means of having skin in the game. If the local players are not investing in projects, the international guys will say, these guys are closer to the country, are closer to the projects. If they're not investing, it means they know something. So we will also stay away in droves. Secondly, if we have invested in a project that has government and the private sector, it becomes difficult for government to then make changes later on midstream that are going to prejudice the investors, if that's going to be cutting their nose to spite their own face because their own pension funds are going to be there. So we believe that actually it catalyzes the international investors to have local money invested in these projects.
I want to get a bit more clarity on that point, because I was going to add, in terms of where you see the asset owners investing, Because initially you would want to see some local skin in the game, but then you talk about investing in an infrastructure project very early on in that life cycle, and that's at a very high risk stage. Yet you did say earlier that you rather would see the asset owners, the pension funds coming in a little bit later on after the DFIs and the initial catalytic investment. So how do you see that local skin in the game slotting in terms of the project life cycle?
Actually, to be clear, we see it coming in after the construction risk when you already have the cash flows that are going to be coming through. So initially, you might have the likes of an IDC, the likes of the infrastructure fund, and some DFIs who might not necessarily be coming in for commercial returns. You will not be getting international pension funds at that stage or local pension funds. But once the project comes to an end and it's been constructed and there's clear cash flows that one can see, you will then see the commercial players like local pension funds coming right. in through the Asset Owners Forum, where we can see the returns, because that's how we look at the pipeline, both from the private and from the public sector. And we are looking at both. We look at returns, and for us to be able to determine returns, we would need to know that the cash flows and the projects are going to be producing cash flows. Mm-hmm. So we are still not dialing up on risk. We are coming in when the cash flows are clear. But our ability to come in when the projects are done and the construction risk has been de-risked enables banks and all those early investors who to come in to know that there will be local players to actually be an offtake. And lastly, when we then come in as local pension funds at the end of this construction period, it enables some of the international pension funds, and we've got the MIDA advisory team that's part of the Asset Owners Forum, and they're helping us build a bridge with the transatlantic pension funds in America, but we're also looking at other pension funds across the globe so that they can co-invest with us in these projects when the projects have been sufficiently de-risked.
Thanks for clarifying that. And Emil, just to come back to your earlier point as well, you know, what we need to do is create that environment to enable the initial funding by DFIs, be it local DFIs or then even in partnership or collaboration with international DFIs, to unlock these projects and catalyze them. To this point, why haven't we been able to do that? There's been a lot of talk whenever I chat to Dr. José Enzo Ramacorpa of skills, and do we have the skills to bring bankable projects to funders? And a lot of work is being done behind the scenes with the CISA and others to second and unlock the skills challenge. What do you see as one of the key challenges there?
Michael, I think firstly, just to respond to what Ndaba said, I think it's a little bit naive to think that, you know, that people will just build their assets and once they all do risks, you know, pension funds can go and easily invest in these projects. There's still the capital required to actually build the projects, take the risks up front. And that's really where players like ours come in. You know, we pension some of the pension funds in his Asset Owners Forum, like, you know, like Eskom Pension Fund and GPF has quite a lot of experience in investing in infrastructure asset managers like ourselves. And that's really where the skills and the resources currently sit in terms of evaluating projects from a greenfields point of view, pre-construction, taking it through construction risk, and then obviously getting it to a stable footing. So I think what needs to be realized is that you cannot just allocate all capital to the low risk post construction side of the equation, because if that is the question, then a lot of capital will sit and wait, and the projects won't get constructed. So you need to address the problem from both sides. And I don't really think it's just a DFI issue. No, I don't think an IDC or even other DFIs on their own would take that risk on their balance sheets. They also want to see private sector investors that properly structure the project and basically ensure that the risk allocation is done properly between public sector and private sector. That's essentially the key of any successful project is that that project development cycle where your risks are allocated to the right people that can really manage them, and those resources. I think there is a shortage of that. You know, it's a very technical, very skilled kind of area of expertise, and there are not that many people that has done that over the last few years, whether in South Africa or Africa. We've obviously seen the asset class growing exponentially in the international markets, but we haven't really seen it coming across to Africa yet in terms of new capital. And so the projects, I believe, are there. A lot of the expertise are sitting with either private developers or private asset managers like ourselves. And the capital also needs to get allocated towards that early stage investment. Yes, I think DFIs will play a role in that. They definitely always do, but they don't take leadership of these projects and own them and construct the whole thing on their own. Mm. There's a necessity for private sector to be part of that negotiation structure up front to ensure that the project is well structured. And there also needs to be capital sitting behind that private sector investor. And once you've got that, you basically will get a lot of projects. And the private sector investors will invest in the best projects first. So we'll structure those and we'll invest in them. And once they're de-risked, yes, then somebody like the Asset Owners Forum, as well as potentially international investors who want access to sort of the de-risk post-construction stable cash flows, can come in. Yeah. And then allows people like ourselves to sort of recycle and do more projects. That's also why we've looked at a model where previously we've been doing this on a limited recourse, closed-ended private equity structure, which requires you to enter and exit into projects fairly quickly on a sort of a seven-year cycle. Whereas I think going forward, asset owners needs to stay in these assets potentially for longer and look at more sort of open-ended or permanent capital kind of vehicles to do that. Mm. That's really what we've been pushing, but we haven't really seen a big uptake from the local pension fund industry to support that.
And Daba, on that point, and you know, the I think here earlier this year of the listing of Rovigo, and Rovigo was going to list with that kind of permanent capital vehicle structure in mind. There was some local, I think it was Investec money behind it. There was some international DFI money, a UK climate fund, and to invest in those secondary renewable energy projects that had been de-risked and that can give you those stable cash flows over a period of time. And found that some of the institutions just didn't have the appetite for it because it didn't have scale at this point. What is your view as the pension funds as to what role you are playing here? Obviously, on the one side, we've just unpacked once the project has been de-risked, but also seeding managers at that high-risk stage of the project.
It's true, and I agree with Emil. We can't put everything really towards the end. And we have been supporting a number of asset managers. So as the Asset Owners Forum, we will not necessarily just be looking at projects or individual assets. We'll also be looking at asset managers. So they'll come to us and say, we want to invest in this, and these are the assets that we'll have, and we'll evaluate them. So we are allocating to both public projects or emanating from the public sector, from the private sector, as well as some of the asset managers. But it would have to be those who are experienced, who can actually deliver. The important thing as well is to realize that as we do that, we'll be catalyzing the development of those projects, so that indeed those asset owners who are waiting for de-risk projects will then be able to get those projects. But the bulk of it, obviously, earlier on you would have those asset managers and banks, as well as some DFIs and government. And when they've been largely de-risked, you'll also have pension money. So you need to straddle at both. Mm. I think the likes of, I won't talk to Rovigo in particular, but one does need to have scale in order to be able to do more and to be able to be diversified. And I understand that they are probably going to be continuing more in the unlisted environment. And in our view, I think there still is a case for having a large player that's going to be well diversified and be able to actually look at these projects and cash flows.
Now, talk to me a little bit more about the Asset Owners Forum. How many funds are currently part of it, and how can other funds join? Because clearly, you've unpacked the benefits of having the economies of scale to bring down costs to assess and vet these projects and do the due diligence and all of that. How is it populated at the moment? How do you see it growing from here?
Okay, we have more than 12, 13 pension funds that account for about 3 trillion rands of assets under management. So that's a big heft and clout. We are also going to be talking to many other pension funds. It's just that at the launch of the Asset Owners Forum, the pension funds that had been able to talk to their own boards of trustees, there were only about 12 or 13 of them, but that already accounts for a large chunk. We'll continue crowding in other asset owners as they see the benefits of investing in this. We're also looking to, as time goes on, to have conversations with some of the Southern African pension funds, the likes of GIPF and the pension funds in Botswana and elsewhere, that actually have big assets, and some of them have already been investing in South Africa. So as time goes on, we will not only grow it to other local asset owners, but also look at our neighboring ones that are already investing in South Africa. And we believe that as we take one or two projects through our investment decision-making processes, they'll be able to understand and see the actual value that we need to do. And that is the reason why we launch publicly, even though we've been working behind the scenes, is for people to be aware that we exist and exactly what benefits we can bring to bear in any pension fund.
Thanks, Indaba. We're going to have to leave it there. So much more still to ask. We're going to have a infrastructure-focused week, I think, in the new year, because there are so many questions. It's so important that we get this right as well, just to unlock the perception and build confidence around the South African economy as well. That was Indaba Zinhle Mkhize, Chief Investment Officer at the Eskom Pension and Provident Fund, and Chair and one of the founders of the Asset Owners Forum of South Africa, who was joined by Emile du Toit, MD of Fundraising and Liabilities Management at Harith General Partners.